This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Bertaram and Mark Carman.
It's the Sunday night edition of Week 4. Matt Bertaram, we are here to look at the Dallas Cowboys to start the show, who got just smoked by the Cleveland Browns 49-38. I find it very entertaining and humorous, some of the narrative coming out of Dallas, including mainly, I guess, from DeMarcus Lawrence, who's just... He said, I'll call this effing soft. I don't feel like we're holding ourselves accountable. And then he goes further at saying that they need to grow up and play like real men out there and not like kids. Bertaram, don't be a kid today on this podcast, will you?
We'll see what happens.
Thoughts on the Cowboys and their utter debacle losing at home to Cleveland?
Yeah, they sucked. I mean, sometimes it's that obvious and it's that succinct, right? I mean, they gave up 49 points and Mayfield, and I'm doing this from memory, I think threw for 165 yards. That's impossible. That's impossible. They gave up 307 rushing yards in the game. Look, I don't care. I know Cleveland's got a lot of weapons. 49 points. And essentially, you know, almost 500, I believe it actually was over 500 yards. It's Landry, a touchdown pass too. Dallas's offense is very good, although they only scored 14 points until they were down by a million in the fourth quarter, and then they made a game of it. There's too much nonsense with the Cowboys. They're terrible situationally. They're not good on third down early on in the games until the game's out of hand and then teams are backing off. They're terrible on special teams. Defensively, they can't get out of their own way. I mean, they weren't even putting up resistance. Cleveland is just going up and down the field without any problem at all. So, look, the good news for the Cowboys, they play in the NFC East. The bad news, they might have the worst defense in football, and the offense can only overcome so much of that.
So the last time they were 1-3 to start the year, you go back to 2010. The 307 yards on the ground that you mentioned, that's the most the Browns have had running the football in 11 years. 31 points in the first half, the most they've had since. That would be 1991, the year the Chicago Bulls won their first NBA championship. I figured I'd bring that in there tonight just for my own sanity. I'm interested in what you think about Cleveland because, you know, the Browns actually might be a thing here. People are getting hyped on the Browns. I'm maybe sure you beat Dallas and they can't stop anybody, but if I'm a Cleveland fan today, I'm thinking, yes, sirree, I'm 3-1, baby.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've beaten Cincinnati, Washington, and Dallas. Now, Dallas is 3-1 or 1-3.
Just ruined it, Bertaram.
But Dallas is no. But what I'm going to say though is Dallas is talented. The Bengals and Washington, they stink. I think if you're a Browns fan, you better be excited. You're 3-1 and you're a Browns fan. How often does that happen? And the offense looks good. Stefanski's done a nice job. Now, the concern here is twofold. The defense has not been good. Okay. The Bengals moved the ball on them. Football team moved the ball on them. Dallas moved the ball up and down the field on them. Baltimore scored 38 points. Like, the defense is awful. And Mayfield has not been good. Okay? Even today, I mean, 165 yards, who cares? That's not overly domineering by any stretch of the imagination. But you got to feel, if you're Cleveland, as though you're making some strides. 3-1 is 3-1. You're running the heck out of the ball. Stefanski's done a nice job. Very good offensive lines. It's a stark contrast to last year. Okay. Denzel Ward, in my opinion, is a top three corner in the NFL. Absolute worst top five. So they got some real players in this team. I think they're going to be in contention for a playoff spot. I'm not knocking Cleveland. I'm just giving an honest assessment. I don't think they're going to win 11 or 12 games, but I think they might win 9 games or so and be right in that mix for a wild card spot.
So the Cowboys, by the way, have given up 146 points as we just wrap up here with the Dallas angle. 146 points in the first four games is the most in franchise history. Some are saying that, you know, we've got a new defensive coordinator. They haven't really figured out Mike Nolan's scheme. It needs to be simplified. Too many play calls going out there. Do you think it's the talent or do you think it's the scheme?
I think it's a combination, like it typically is with these kinds of things, but their talent is not at a great level right now. They have some good pass rushers. Alden Smith came into the week leading the league, which is incredible. That is one of the more amazing stories in the NFL this year. DeMarcus Lawrence is there. Their corners can't cover. Can't cover anybody. The secondary is an abject disaster. They just absolutely cannot stop anyone from throwing the football if they don't get immediate pressure. And they have injuries. Van Der Esch being out really hurts. McCoy out for the year hurts. Sean Lee's always out, but he hurts. Good player. So that's part of it. Now, Nolan's scheme, yeah, look, there was a touchdown earlier, and it was highlighted actually on Sunday Night in America, or Football Night in America on Sunday Night Football, where, you know, Beckham had an inside release against Darryl Worley on the goal line, and there was no help, and Worley's playing outside technique. Like, a college player could have scored that touchdown. That's insane. Either Worley played the technique wrong, or that's one of the worst calls I've ever seen by a coordinator. So it's a combination. But if you're Davos, look, it's concerning. I don't care what scheme you're playing. I mean, they're giving up 36.5 points a game. Like, there's no scheme in the league that calls for that. So at some point, it is on the players.
I mean, I think they should put the NFC East into the Hudson River is my overall takeaway here, is what's going on with Dallas. And you look around because Cowboys are fine. They're 1-3. So, you know, you're half game back of the first place. 1-2-1 Philadelphia Eagles were recording on Sunday night as the Eagles just somehow survived San Francisco on the road. That's your first place team. And by the way, the Eagles have been outscored by 23 points. The Redskins are 1-3. They've been outscored by 33 points, and the Giants are 0-4. Still well alive, though, by the way.
Yeah. You know,
been outscored by 49 points. So I don't know what to make of the NFCs other than the fact that it straight blows.
Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. Philly or Dallas is going to win the division. Washington's terrible. And the Giants, look, we all talk about the Jets. That stadium. I mean, you want to talk about it, you know, a sad, sad place to be. Holy hell, do those teams stink. So the Giants and Washington are going nowhere. I got to tell you, and I don't think this is an overreaction. If Dallas or Philadelphia gets to 7 wins, they're winning that division. Because you look at, in this division now, they only really will have to play each other in games they'll be favored in. They play the NFC West and the AFC North. They're just losing those games. Other than Cincinnati, who's the easy mark out of that group? Have fun. Like, they're not as good as any of those teams. So it's going to be an uphill battle for Dallas, for Philly, for everybody in that division.
All right, let's move over to the NFC North and specifically the Chicago Bears, who were a 3-point underdog to Indianapolis at home today. And that line screamed Bet Indy to me because when you're 3-0 and you're at home and you're playing the Colts, who are not exactly, you know, I don't know, the world champion 49ers, this is a winnable game, you would think. But the Colts came into Soldier Field and kicked the living crap out of the Bears. 19-11 was the final. It was actually not that close. Nick Foles looked awful. And now you've got a couple Bears fans. I'm saying a couple because it's not the whole city. But they want Mitchell Trubisky back, which, by the way, is insane. Dude, you're not bringing Mitchell Trubisky back. You stick with Nick Foles. This is the best defense the Bears might play all season long. But I'm not exactly sure where you are now if you're Chicago, because there's a lot of excitement, and now you play the Colts, and that offense was absolutely just horrendous today.
Carm, I got to tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I watched a lot of that game. The Bears have nobody who can play quarterback. Nobody. I don't care that Foles, it was his first start. I mean, who cares? The man has been in the league for like a decade. Trubisky, I've seen people already, well, you know, they were 3-0 when he started. Yet, yeah, not because of him. Like, he's not the answer. Bringing back Mitchell Trubisky is not solving any problems. They play on Thursday night against Tampa. I'm sure we will see Foles again. You have left Trubisky in the dust. You cannot go back to him because of one game where Foles basically looked like Trubisky. So I think realistically speaking, Foles is at minimum getting the next couple of games here. And then if he really continues to be an atrocity, then maybe you'd consider something. But man, all I could think of watching that game, as the Bears, for all intents and purposes, scored 3 points, was, my God, they could have got Cam Newton. They could have got Andy Dalton. They could have got Jameis Winston. Nope. None of them. Let's go trade a pick. They wouldn't have to trade for any of the other three guys. For Nick Foles. And oh, by the way, look, while Foles stunk, and he's a huge part of the problem, like 16 carries for 28 yards the entire game. Can't run for a foot. Can't generate anything on first down. Allen Robinson's the only guy who can catch a pass on this team. Darnell Mooney was second on this. I'm not exaggerating. I take pride knowing everybody. I don't even know who the hell Darnell Mooney is.
Well, he's a fifth round pick rookie, so you're not the only one that doesn't know who Darnell Mooney is.
It's just brutal. And Nagy, who I like, I've defended Nagy forever. Figure it out, man. Do something. I mean, I know that you're limited at QB. I get that. You got to do something. Whether it's gadget plays, whether it's just saying the hell with it, we're going to run 40 times. I mean, whatever it is. Because what they're doing is just a complete waste of time. I know they're 3-1, but it's a soft as hell 3-1.
Well, and again, the Colts, they do have a good run defense. But the Bears, and let's break it down a little further. They gained 17 yards in the first half on the ground on 11 carries. That is 1.5 yards per carry. So when you're trying to establish the run and try to establish anything to make it a little bit easier on Nick Foles, you didn't do it. And again, it's Nick Foles. He needs a little bit of an assistance here. So it's a problem, and it's been a problem. I don't know how you get out of it if you're actually facing a good defense, which is why the Bears are a bottom of the NFC playoff team who are going to be it'll be a miracle if they do anything in the playoffs. I still think they're a playoff team with, you know, seven teams making the playoffs, but they were definitely exposed today is how I saw it. You want to move on to Tampa? Let's move on to Tampa. Justin Herbert was impressive today for the Chargers, and Tom Brady was 5 touchdown passes for the Bucs. Los Angeles, though, you really had control of this football game, and then you didn't take a knee at the end of the first half and handed the Bucs a touchdown, and that changed the whole complexion of the football game.
Could not understand it. I watched that game in the early window, and that game's 24-7. The Chargers get the ball back late, suck up, misses a field goal for Tampa, and they're backed up inside their own 10-yard line, and there was something like 30 seconds left.
Under a minute.
Yeah, yep. I mean, they had no time. There's no reasonable expectation they're going to be able to score there. And they ran the ball, so they obviously knew they weren't going to score. And they screw up the handoff, whether you want to blame it on Kelly, the running back, or Herbert, whatever. The handoff was high. Kelly could have handled it. He didn't. Ball gets dropped. Bucks fall on it, score a touchdown on third down there to Evans, and all of a sudden the game just completely flips. I mean, from there on out, it's 31-7 the rest of the way. So two trains of thought here. One was Herbert played very well. Had a pick late, but man, he stands in under pressure. He can deliver the ball. Nice deep ball. I was wrong. I really, watching Herbert, he didn't really impress me all that much. He impressed me at the Senior Bowl, and I got to see him up close and talk to him. He was very impressive there. But watching his tape at Oregon, I kind of felt like, yeah, I see why he's going high. He's got the pillows, he's got the makeup, but I don't love the talent. He's really impressed me. He's been excellent. The flip side of this is they are now 1-3, and they have blown games that are just, frankly, things they've done all over the years. They lose to the Chiefs in a game that they had totally under control. I know they're the Chiefs. I get it. But they were had them beat, and they let them back into the game. They had the Bucs beat. They let them back into the game. They lost to a Panthers team that at the time had lost 10 games in a row. It feels like the Chargers are talented, and because of Herbert moving in the right direction, but also like kind of stuck in neutral because they just keep blowing games. But ultimately, I do think you have to say, look, if Herbert's as good as he looks, then they have a bright future.
There was one interesting stat. I was watching that game early in the first window, too. They said that Herbert, when they blitzed him in college, he was unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, so that, and he picked up some huge throws when the blitz was on today. So I think the Chargers, I'm with you that they've got themselves a quarterback. As for the Bucs, they've done exactly what we said they were going to do after losing to New Orleans. The schedule softened up. Brady has been, he doesn't have the zing, and he threw a pick six today, but he's still very good at throwing back shoulder throws. Gronk he's not doing much, but he had a nice catch today. Mike Evans, he knows how to find the football. So Brady's kind of figuring out, I think, what he's got around him. And they're sitting at 3-1 up top their division. New Orleans doesn't look great. So, why take anything off the table with Tampa Bay right now? They've got the Bears and Green Bay next. The Bears on the road, Green Bay at home, and they're playing them Thursday night. But it's certainly getting interesting in Tampa.
It is. It is. I mean, you know, five TDs. And I, look, Brady, for part of that game, really did not look good. And then the second half just went crazy. Brady's to the point in his career, if you give him a clean pocket and you have the throw going inside the numbers, he's still extremely effective. If you can muddy the pocket, get around his feet, get in his face, force the ball outside the numbers, Brady's very, very ineffective. But as a game wore on, the Buccaneers gave him more and more time. Brady found his reads. Look, they look good, man. 3-1. The defense is good. They don't give up any rushing yardage. They're gonna pressure the quarterback with Todd Bowles, who brings a ton of pressure as their D coordinator. So the Bucs have to feel good. The division is not terrible. Carolina's 2-2. The Saints saved their season with a win today in Detroit, as ugly as it was. You know, Atlanta's not good. But I think if you're Tampa, you got to feel like you're in the driver's seat. Now you get this game on Thursday against the Bears, who defensively will certainly cause problems, but can they score? I mean, I just can't feel like Foles is going to out-duel Brady in this game.
It's a very interesting night in Chicago with a quick turnaround to see if they can get their offense going. All right, let's look at what happened today, because the Bears were in the 325 slot because the Chiefs in New England got postponed with Cam Newton testing positive.
Right.
So now you got to fly the day of a game, and they're playing Monday Night Football tomorrow, which I still think is crazy. We don't actually – I mean, I know they're doing all this testing, but who the hell knows what's really going on here? But so the Pats have to fly and play. People are wondering how unfair that is. Of course, it is unfair, but this is 2020. Do you agree in playing the game tomorrow night, period?
I think it's a big risk, because if you have a bunch of guys who are testing negative right now who come Wednesday test positive,
right,
you got a major problem on your hands. Whereas right now, it might be inconvenient, but you don't have a big problem on your hands right now. That said, and maybe I'm naive in this, I am trusting that they know what they're doing. Now, that may be very naive, but the reason I say that is they have been conferring with infectious disease experts on this all year long, every day. I would imagine that if they really thought there was a major potential for a cross-contamination outbreak here, they would not do this. But I'll say this, Newton has been the only guy to test positive on the Pats. The Jordan Tamo, the backup, the scout team quarterback for the Chiefs, tested positive. David, no other tests that have come back positive. So if they continue to test negative, I understand why they'll play. I do understand it. Now, again, it is a risk, but I feel like everything in 2020 is some level of a risk, right? I mean, it feels like you walk out of your house to get milk. It's somewhat of a risk. So I'm a little surprised you're playing. I think it's extremely unfair for New England. Now, granted, again, we've said this in the podcast a million times. Life's just not fair in 2020. That's just the way it is. The Pats are going to have to get on a plane, go out to Kansas City, play the Chiefs in Arrowhead with fans in the stands with Brian Hoyer instead of Cam Newton. I mean, if the Pats win that game, that is one hell of a job, because that is about as much that could possibly go against you as there is. So this is a brutal spot for New England.
You agree with picking Hoyer over Jarrett Stidham?
Yeah, I do. Because I think Hoyer, he's an NFL quarterback. He's a backup NFL quarterback, but he's an NFL quarterback. I don't even know that Jarrett Stidham could play in the NFL. I really think if they started Jarrett Stidham in this game and the Chiefs were just, you know, healthy throughout the game, no crazy thing happened, I think the Chiefs would beat them by 30 points. But with Hoyer, he'll hit the short passes. He'll keep them on schedule. Now, he may throw a pick at some point. He might miss some passes he shouldn't. But, you know, I think he'll at least keep New England reasonably in the game, whereas I don't know that Stidham would do that.
You know what I would do, Verderam, if I was the NFL? I would have this game played, because you want to make the dough, but I would have stand-ins for all the Patriots. Just get out there, wear those jerseys. Nobody will know it's not the offensive lineman. And let's just play the football game. You're going to lose to Kansas City anyway. Sure, Brian Hoyer, go ahead and quarterback the team, because it doesn't matter if you go away and be done with it. Let's go stunt doubles and play the football game. What do you think?
You don't think the Pats have any shot to win? It's Belichick.
I don't. Do you?
The Chiefs fan of me that has been scarred for all my life up until the Mahomes era says anything's possible, but no. Honestly, no. I think the worst part for New England, beyond all the COVID stuff, is just without Cam there, I don't know that the passing game's crazy different. It'd still be a short passing game, timing game. But that option game, which has been so good for them, nobody cares if Brian Hoyer's running the option. Like, he's handed off. So, makes it a lot harder to run.
Yeah, I just don't see it. But they'll play it tomorrow night, 6 o'clock Central time. Yep. So, we'll talk about it on the Wednesday pod. Let's move on to Houston, who's now 0-4, lost to Minnesota today at home, 31-23. Slight valiant comeback effort by the Texans. But we're looking at you, Bill O'Brien. Is this the end, my friend? As now Houston's got the NFL's worst run defense. They gave up 160 yards. The Texans are 0-4 for the first time since 2008. J.J. Watt is calling it terrible and brutal and depressing, and then it sucks, which I think we all understand those sentiments. Thoughts on the Texans and Bill O'Brien?
I mean, anyone who's listened to this podcast knows what's coming. Bill O'Brien has no business being the head coach of an NFL football team. And he sure as hell has no business being the GM of this team. He took this team, which a lot of people a couple of years ago thought might be a Super Bowl team here in the near future, traded away DeAndre Hopkins, brought in David Johnson, who, by the way, David Johnson today, a robust 16 carries for 63 yards. Nada. They brought in Brandon Cooks, who was hurt all the time. Brandon Cooks today was targeted 3 times and did not have a catch. They brought in Randall Cobb for a 3-year contract, who today had 2 catches for 36 yards. They signed Eric Murray, who has no business in the world being a starting player at safety in the NFL. He had 3 tackles today and a quarterback hit. Like, and then Tunzel, they paid a gajillion dollars to, $66 million, 58 guaranteed over 3 years, and gave up their first and second round picks for this year, by the way, to get Tunzel. So as much as they suck, they don't even have a pick until the 3rd round in the draft. Like, I don't understand how the McNair family, who owns Houston, or owns the Texans, I should say, how does the McNair family not look at this and go, you know what? Get out. Get out. Get out now, please. We will move on. He signed through 2022. Let him coach the end of the season. Eat the money on the back end. My God, join an NFL team. You got more than enough money to do it. And go get a real head coach. Because anybody would love to go coach there. It's Texas. You got no income tax. You got Deshaun Watson on the team. Like, you got a chance to be really good if you can figure out the roster, but you're not going to do it with O'Brien. I don't think they'll fire him in the middle of the year, but God almighty, move on. He is horrendous, and I think that was shown today against an 0-3 Vikings team that they were barely even in the game with for 55 minutes of it.
I do appreciate loyalty in life, Matt Verderama. Just put that out there. And the Texans, you know, that organization has shown more loyalty to Bill O'Brien than maybe any organization in all of sports. I mean, the Texan fans are in a mutiny right now. That's not good for your head coach. So eventually, you don't survive this. It's going to end for Bill O'Brien, and they're going to do something different in Houston. But too little, too late, man. DeAndre Hopkins should still be in the Texans uniform. I mean, he's done a lot of damage. So even bringing in a new coach, which of course is the right thing, and GM is the right thing to do, you've really cost yourself here. And now, I mean, who knows how long before, Deshaun Watson is able to stay healthy here. It's on the table with him, with any quarterback. So time's a ticking, time's a wasting. Let's go, Houston. And you've got the talent to turn it around, but you're down the road now. It's just kind of annoying, actually, because you have one of the great talents in football and it's being wasted. All right, let's go back to the NFC both. Let's just go back to New York. Consider New York the NFC, even though it hosts the Jets too. The Jets or the Giants is the question here in our Into the Future category. Who will finish with a worse record? The football Giants, who are sitting at 0-4, or the football Jets, who are also 0-4 after losing Thursday night to the Broncos?
What smells worse, those two teams or the Turnpike? Okay, now I'm from New York, but everybody in my family's from Jersey. Spent plenty of time in the great state of New Jersey. I'll say the teams, and believe me, if you've ever been to the Turnpike, you roll up the windows and try to seal the car off. I think the Jets are going to have the worst record, and here's why. I think they're the worst team. They played each other. I think the Jets would lose. But also because they play the AFC West and they play the NFC West. Now, the Giants play the NFC West as well, but they also play the East. And the Jets have a third-place schedule that is not exactly the easiest schedule in the world. That means the Colts they already lost to, and it means Cleveland, who they're going to lose to. They are not going to beat anybody in the NFC West. Obviously, they already lost San Francisco at home. And I would be stunned if they beat anybody in the AFC West, considering they already lost to the they already lost to the Broncos at home. I'm not a big like, oh, they're going to go 0-16 guy. They might go 0-16. I was watching them play Denver, and really for the first time in a very long time, thought to myself, like, this team, they're going to challenge it. I don't know if they're going to do it. I mean, only four games into the year, but they're going to really challenge not winning a game. And I think the Giants, while they're bad, I think they'll win like two or three games.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Jets are not going to be favored in a game all year. That's for sure.
No.
And Arizona, though, they're reeling. I don't think they're going to lose. I don't think they're going to beat the Cardinals. But we got some trouble in paradise over there last couple of weeks. So that's next week for the Jets. But other than that, like, I don't know, you play the Dolphins back to back in around a bye week. Can off of losing to Miami on the road, can you get yourself right together in a bye week and beat the Dolphins at home? Like, that to me looks like their best chance of getting a W.
I agree.
And the Giants, I do think that the Giants are interesting though. You're talking about no Saquon. But at the end of the day, I think they get a couple.
They also have that division.
Right.
The division's so bad, man. Like, they'll probably win like two of those games.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that'll be enough, I think.
All right, let's go to who's the second best team in the AFC is the question here. And, I mean, everybody thinks it's Baltimore, but you're putting down here that Buffalo has an argument. The Bills just did it again this week. The Bills are – I don't even think there's a debate now that Buffalo is for real. Are they the second best team in the AFC? You want to make that argument?
I'm going to go with the Ravens, but I think the Bills are – moving at least into the conversation. And the Steelers, I think, also are, although they obviously didn't play this week, so kind of put them aside for a second. Baltimore did what it had to do this week. Went to Washington, handled business. Game wasn't close. Wasn't overly impressive. I will say, with Baltimore, and you know, you've heard me say this a lot on this podcast, this isn't some Johnny-come-lately opinion. They have got to get more out of Jackson throwing the football. They have to get more out of him throwing the ball. Did nothing against the Chiefs. This week, 193 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. Now, he averaged 9 yards an attempt. He only threw the ball 21 times, but like, they got it. That's fine against Washington. That is just not going to do it against better teams. It's not. That is a concern I do have. That said, I still think they're the second best team because I think if they played the Bills on a neutral site, I think the Ravens would win the game. But Buffalo's right there, man. Like, Allen's played really well. He's still, I'm not going to lie, he still does stuff that scares the hell out of me every week. Whether it's some ridiculous sack that he takes or he throws the ball up for grabs when he's halfway to the ground. Like, I just can't stop. And maybe this is my hang up and I'll be the first to admit that. But every time he does that crap, I just think to myself, when you play a really good team, you're not getting away with that. You're going to pay for those ridiculous mistakes. But the defense hasn't been that good this year, and I think it's going to be much better. Diggs has been awesome. I love the coaching staff. And Allen, as much as I just have my grievances with him, he's played much better this year. So I think they're right in the conversation. But yes, I still do believe that it's Chiefs, Ravens, and then Bills.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head where I'm going with Buffalo. The defense is a little bit too inconsistent for me. Early today, they looked terrible and then got it together and got some turnovers late in the game, which helped and had enough. But listen, you need, as good as Josh Allen's been, you need a dominant defense to elevate yourself to number two, at least in my mind, in the AFC. And the Bills just don't have that. So I'm still sticking with Baltimore. But let me just tell you one story, Bertram. I think you might enjoy this on a Buffalo fan who I reached out to today. This gentleman was begging to be an intern in radio back in the day. And he lived in Buffalo. He wanted to come to Chicago to be an intern. And I said, you know, the internship doesn't pay. We rarely hire after the internship. This is not a good idea. But he had the determination. He said, listen, I just want to come and visit. I just want to meet you and explain to you why I want to do it. So he drove from Buffalo to come to Chicago paid for, and this was not a rich guy, but paid for an apartment, intern in the summertime, and he was the biggest Buffalo's Bills fan that I've ever met on the planet. He had on his flip phone the Bills Make You Want to Shout theme song. Have you ever heard this song?
Yes.
So, in honor of Matt Timon tonight, on Stacking the Box, I just want to say congratulations to the 4-0 Bills. I don't have you number two, but I'm thinking about you tonight. And this is it's a great time to be a Buffalo Bills fan right now. I think they have crossed over here, Vertoram, and are set up for some beautiful success here in 2020 and beyond. And that's a congratulations to Buffalo. And I know that you have a special place in your heart for Buffalo.
Always have.
All right. We go to Arizona and we go to Kyler Murray. And the question is there an elite quarterback in the making here? Arizona's had a couple tough losses here, and he is unique. There's a word when you watch him, all 5 feet, 6 inches of him. But you're putting on the table that we got an elite quarterback. He was 24-31 with 3 touchdowns. Did not throw a pick. Quarterback rating of 116.7. The man is a force, Matt Vertoram.
Yeah, except that for today, he threw 133 yards. He threw for 4.3 yards an attempt. And last week, he threw 3 picks in a game they barely lost. I like Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray's got to be better. And you know what? In the past, you'd say, well, it's a second year. I don't care. I don't care. The NFL is so set up for you to come in now and be good right away as quarterback. Just spare me the whole, well, he's young and he's just, so what? I mean, big deal. Justin Herbert's young. He looks great. Joe Burrow has you and me as his tackles and looks fine. Murray's got to be better. And I think Murray is going to be a very, very good quarterback in the NFL. Right now, I think he's above average. But these last 2 weeks, if they're going to be good, he's got to be better. And 3 picks against the Lions isn't cutting the mustard. And God knows 133 yards against Carolina is not doing it either. You need to be better. And it wasn't like he was under constant duress in this game. He was sacked one time. Carolina is one of the lowest pressure rates in the NFL coming into this game. So he was hit 3 times in this game, all 3 times by Brian Burns. It was it. To 3 times. I need more than that. So, yeah, I think he's an elite. I think he has a potential to be elite. But right now, I've been big on the Cardinals. I've sung their praises since the summer. And I don't think they're necessarily dead in the water. But, you can't lose to the Lions and the Panthers. One of those games, you're young. Okay. No. You can't do this. He doesn't play well against the Jets next week. The alarm bells are going to be going off.
All right, I'm going to defer to the Wednesday podcast, and I'm going to do a deep dive on Kyler Murray, and I will come back with my take on whether I think he's going to be elite. Will you accept that on this Sunday night, Vertoram?
Not thrilled about it, but I will.
I'm going to have to go into a deep dive here and to really see what's going on. Whenever I'm watching highlights of Kyler Murray, I think nobody is that fast and that and elusive. I mean, it's hardest to get control of the dude. And then he can put it on you as well. But I'm not saying that anything you just said is wrong either. So I'm going to do my deep dive. But I'm tending to lean with you right now that elite is a little too tall. But I do think it's on the table for him. I haven't seen anything when I have been watching that I don't think it's impossible for him to get there. But I'll get back to you with a deeper dive on Murray on Wednesday.
Okay, fair enough. I look forward to hearing what you have when you get back.
I love the pause there. There's the integrity of Stacking the Box, and I don't want to say yes when I don't really know.
Okay.
What I've seen, I've been super impressed. But you went a little further than I'm willing to debate you tonight. All right, let's go do it in or out. Kyle Shanahan deserves Coach of the Year consideration. I think you're putting this on the rundown, Vertoram, because you think he does. Are you in or out on that?
No, I am in, because even though they're 2-2, Mike, they have nobody on that team left. And they just continue to be in these games. Look, I would have really been on it if they had beaten the Eagles, which they didn't. And I know they've beaten the Jets and the Giants. I understand all that. But, man, I mean, I'm not saying you should win Coach of the Year based off these two. Don't get me wrong. There's a difference between winning it and having consideration. Shanahan's done a hell of a job, man. I mean, they have nobody. Kittle just came back. Samuel just came back. They're playing Nick Mullins, who's not good. Defensively, they're missing everybody in the world on that team. And they're 2-2 after four games. Like, again, I get it. The Jets and the Giants suck the high heaven. That's who they beat. Or they did beat the hell out of both teams. But, you know, I guess the point I wanted to make on this topic is I think Shanahan's doing a heck of a job. Really is. They have no discernible health at all on either side of the ball. And to be 2-2, despite, you know, how easy maybe the teams were that they beat, whatever, I'm impressed. I am. I don't think he'd win Coach of the Year by any stretch right now, but I do think the consideration, yeah. I think at the end of the year, people will say, man, he really did a nice job with what he had to work with.
Well, he's getting everything he possibly can out of Jerick McKinnon, which nobody was tracking that to, you know, that he was going to be running the football and catching the football as much this year. He's using two quarterbacks in Mullins and Beathard, and they both are not going to be starting for anybody, obviously, in the NFL. So no. Your point, I like that you put this on here because we focus too much a lot of the time on the top of the mountain when really there's a lot of great jobs being done in the middle or even towards the bottom. Like it makes me think of Brian Flores last year, who could have easily been the coach of the year with the Dolphins. So maybe, you know, whatever, 2020 Kyle Shanahan is that version. I don't know. But I also would point out that he'd be a better candidate if they had beaten the Eagles, who I don't think.
Yes, he would have been.
That was certainly an opportunity for the 49ers. I think they got to be disappointed on what happened big time on Sunday nights. So I'm out at the end of the day, but I like that you put it out there. All right, let's do the Browns. Will they make the playoffs this season? In or out? The upstart 3-1 Cleveland Browns.
I'm out by the slimmest of margins.
Wow. God.
I really want to be in, and I might be in a few weeks. We'll see. But I thought about the AFC, and here are my teams right now. If I had to pick seven teams, I think I'll get in. Okay, Kansas City, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Indianapolis, and that leaves me with two other spots. And for me, it's between Tennessee, Cleveland, and New England. I like Tennessee's 3-0. Now, COVID might put a wrench in this whole thing with Tennessee, but I like the Titans. I think they play in a weaker division, so I will take the Titans because they still have three games left with Houston and Jacksonville. I think they're winning all of them. And I'm taking New England because they're going to beat the hell out of the Dolphins and the Jets three more times. You know, they find ways to win. So I like – now, the only thing I'll say, Cleveland also does play the NFC East. Now, they've already played two of those games against the NFC East, so it does mitigate the advantage a little bit. But I will take New England. I think Cleveland right now checks in at a very strong eighth. And by the way, would not be shocking at all if they made the playoffs. But I'm out because of a numbers game.
Things to like about the Browns. One thing, they already played Baltimore and have that loss in their 3-1. So that's a win. Schedule gets a little tough the next 2 weeks. Indy and Pittsburgh. Can you split those two games?
Right.
That would be the question. And do you not stumble against Cincinnati on the road, who you barely beat at home, by the way? I don't know how much that matters in 2020. Like, I think, you know, like the Browns aren't exactly dominant. I'm out on this one, too, just for the sheer fact that, you know, it's not like they're winning because of Baker. So they have not figured out their quarterback situation to the level that I would have to be comfortable in saying they're in with the amount of talent that's going on in the AFC right now. But COVID's a huge thing, by the way. And what's going to happen to the Tennessee Titans? I mean, that thing is spreading. We're up to 18 now.
20.
20. Okay. So
10 players, 10 staff.
Yeah. So, what does that look like coming back? All of it. There's a lot of, and by the way, what other teams are going to be impacted? What's going to happen with the Patriots? So it's obviously very, 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 very early in the season. We played a quarter of it, but at the end of the day with the Browns, I'm still out. Minnesota will make a real run at the postseason. The 1-3 Vikings getting a win today, which was, I guess, somewhat surprising, beating Houston at 31-23. I'm out on this, but you're fighting for the Vikings, Sir Verderim. Why so?
I'm not. I'm also out, but I put it on there because I do think they have real talent on the team. They do. I mean, they have guys on this team that are talented. And the NFC, maybe not as strong as we thought, right? Like, the East sucks. The West, okay, you got Seattle. The Rams barely beat the Giants. And the Cardinals are falling off here pretty quickly. The Niners are a mess, even though they're 2-2, but they've got all kinds of injuries. The NFC South, I mean, even let's say two teams get in, right? If you got two from there and two from the West and one from the East, now all of a sudden you got two in the North. Okay, the Packers and then maybe the Bears. Okay, maybe the Vikings. I'm out because I just don't trust them to go on a big streak here because I don't trust Cousins to do that. And the defense still leaves a lot to be desired. But I would say keep an eye on the Vikings. Like, that's a win that saves the season. Now, they do go to Seattle for Sunday Night Football this week, and I just don't see them winning that game. But I do think Minnesota's got the talent to at least make it interesting if they get on a little bit of a roll.
I mean, you look at what's happening right now with Minnesota. Okay, you lost to Green Bay, and Rodgers played phenomenal. Indianapolis, I'm after watching the Colts today, I'm more impressed than I thought I was. So that loss doesn't look as bad. They had a very tight loss to Tennessee. Can you beat the Bears twice? Really? That's right. What it comes down to.
Right.
That's really what it comes down to. And that's I'm not ruling that
on
out.
On the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I guess I'm still out. All right, let's do the NFL. We'll add week 18 for COVID makeup games, in or out. I'm in on this, and I think it's going to be week 18 and week 19 the way things are going right now. Maybe even week 20. I don't know. They're going to have to get creative at some point here, because unless they're going to go middle of the year, create a bubble. The way I see people handling their business right now, I'm picking up dinner the other night. The whole city is out, is they're all sitting there without masks, having food. I don't think people are taking there's a transition going into the wintertime that I think people are missing. I think the NFL is going to have a lot of problems coming up here.
I don't know how that'll play out. I do think the NFL, it's a little bit different in the sense a lot of these guys, I'm sure, pretty much go to the facility and go home. When millions of dollars are at stake, people tend to listen a little more. But I do think I am in on this. I do think they're going to have to add a week at the end of the year. I do. I think that because right now, look, they got really lucky this week. Tennessee and Pittsburgh, they could reschedule that game. And with the Chiefs and Pats, apparently that game's going to go off Monday night. So they were very fortunate. But what happens if that happens in week 13? Then what? There's no rescheduling that game. Like, not now that another week, there's not. So I have to think that they will do something here. They add. I could even see them doing something where they say, you know what? We're going to move the last 3 weeks. We're going to turn weeks 15, 16, and 17 into 16, 17, and 18. And we're going to play some games in week 15 or so. And then that way, every team still has to play that last week into the year. So there's still a competitive balance going to the playoffs. I could see them doing something like that. And everybody just kind of gets a bye, right around the middle of December, early part of December. I see that happening, for sure. I think they're going to have to do something. I do. Unless they're just willing, as the year goes on, if there's a handful of teams to play 15 games, to just say, that's what you're doing. You're playing 15 games. I don't know if they would do that. So I'm in on the 18-week idea because I don't think they're going to be willing to just give games up unless you have a situation where the game means absolutely nothing in the standings. Then I could see them just saying, look, you know what? We're not going to go crazy to play the Giants and Washington. We don't care. Then maybe. But if the game matters at all, there's any impact, they got to play it.
Yep. And there's also the money factor, which is always going to be enormous. All right, Matt Verma, let's wrap it up here as we move into week 5. Anything special you want to get out here? And by the way, thank you so much for listening. Like, subscribe, give a rating. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. And what's the wrap up for Vertiram going into week 5?
I will be a human tension convention tomorrow or Monday. So if you're listening on Monday, then today. My beloved Oakland A's are playing at 4:00 Eastern time in game 1 of the ALDS against Houston. We all know at this point that the Astros are nothing more than a bunch of cheating frauds. The A's can't beat them enough. And so I'm really, really hoping that Oakland handles business. I will be very, very into that game. And then the second it ends, or at least in theory, at about 6 o'clock Central, the Chiefs and the Pats play. So I will be basically glued to my recliner in my office watching those games as my daughter is, I'm sure, yelling at me to you know, be a father and play with her, and my wife's yelling at me to help pick up around the house. And I got to be honest, I always try to be a really good dad and a really good husband. I'm going to be useless on Monday. So, sorry, Steph. Sorry, Maisie. I'll make it up to you both. But, yeah, the A's and the Chiefs will have my heart and my eyes on Monday afternoon and evening.
Well, good luck to Oakland, who eliminated the White Sox, and that was painful on so many levels. I think the White Sox were the better team, but the A's got it done, and that's the way it is. So, I'm still getting over it. And the Cubs were miserable as well. That was brutal. So I'll end my sorry end of the of going into week 5 baseball ode to the Cubs and Sox 2020 that I'm quickly trying to forget. All the White Sox in 2021 are going to be a force for the Rams. Remember that.
I got to tell you, they were very impressive. I don't know that I agree with you that they're the better team, although obviously I'm biased. Because I think if you're the better team, you have a better third starter than Dane Dunning, who went 2/3 of an inning. But I got to hand it to them, man. Like they can hit. Like I don't really watch a lot of the White Sox just because the way the schedule was this year. There was really no reason to. But man, I mean, they're trotting out guys like Adam Engel. Like going into the series, I was like, who the hell is Adam Engel? Couldn't get him out. Tim Anderson, I know, of course. I know he's a very good player. But my God, he got like 700 in the series. The only saving grace for the A's in that series was Jose Abreu in a lot of big spots. They were able to get him out.
Yep.
That was it. True. I mean, that really was the difference in the series. That and I thought Renteria walking Chad Pinder was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life. Like, made zero sense. I don't care what his explanation was. Like, as someone who has watched the entirety of Chad Pinder's career, let me just say, what? Like, how in God's name do you walk Chad Pinder there? But anyway, people are now tuning us out. They don't care. But yeah, that was my take on that series.
Thanks for listening. Week 4 before Monday night is in the books. We will see you on Wednesday.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.